It's another edition of your favorite podcast. Indeed, it's Quality Hang. I'm Rod Brooks, and as always, I'm joined on this podcasting adventure by my partner in crime, the King of New Orleans, Louisiana. He is Marcus Osborne. What's up, man?
What it do, baby? What it do?
It do what it do.
Yeah, so we're in that post Mardi Gras glow, 30 days after all the good stuff happened. But so what people, I mean, a lot of people don't understand this, but March out here is actually pretty insane too, because we got one of the biggest St. Patrick's Day parades. They spend 2 weeks celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Of course, that's the most New Orleans thing ever. Let's celebrate something that has absolutely no connection to New Orleans, but let's do it on an absolutely massive grand scale.
It's so crazy, dude. It is so crazy.
That makes perfect sense.
and then we got Jazz Fest coming up in April, so everything's kind of ramping up to June, until festival season, I should say. Mm-hmm. Once that shit rolls around, then it's popping again. Essence Fest will be here before you know it. This year is blowing by, or maybe it's just because we old people.
Yeah, you know, I do feel like that the world is spinning a little bit quicker on its axis, and the weeks and the months and the years seem to be going by quicker. I have a very important question I must ask you, because it is a certain time of the year in Louisiana, and mm-hmm. it's not just, you know, post Mardi Gras coming up on festival season. You mentioned Jazz Fest, which is massive, to kind of kick it all off, but yeah. it's crawfish season down in Louisiana. And listen, I heard that because of climate change, that the crawfish this year are not as plentiful and they're not as big. Did I get bum information, or is Louisiana finally going to come around and see that climate change is real? And the hurricanes that you've been getting at odd times of the year with ridiculous strength, that didn't convince you. But maybe, just maybe, you'll see these teeny tiny ass crawfish instead of the usual big ass crawfish. And all of a sudden, Louisiana will go, hold the fuck up. We got to do something about this. Are the crawfish tiny?
Dude, you know, you're really not wrong when it comes to New Orleans. If most people don't know this, but New Orleans judges shit by the culture.
Of course.
By the cultural event. So it's not real until it affects the culture.
Of course.
So just like you said, climate change is not real. Wait a minute. What? The crawfish is small.
Yeah.
Oh, something's wrong. Something's wrong.
I know how it works down there. I spent enough time.
Not wrong. I know one of the big things is that crawfish are really expensive this year, what everybody said. Now, it's come down a little bit. It's come down some. But everybody's like trying to prep their crawfish boils and all that stuff. And they were like, man, this shit is expensive as fuck.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that may be a function of crawfish scarcity more than anything. So you could be on to something, bro.
I mean, I hate to hear that, because, I mean, listen, as much as I enjoy a crawfish boil, because it's a gathering. You know what I mean? It's a scene. It's a vibe. It is. A bunch of people getting together and breaking bread, or to be specific, snapping the tails and heads off a crawfish. You're not really there for the meal. Now, you could go to a good crawfish boil and you could come away satisfied, but it's going to take some effort, because even the biggest crawfish, the haul, you know, the meat you're getting out of the tail
you're working
for it, without a doubt. But if the crawfish are getting smaller and already, you know, difficult meal is getting even more difficult. You dig what I'm saying?
Hell yeah. I'm kind of at the point where I don't want to do the work.
Sure.
Just when I show up, hand me my etouffee, make sure my stuff is already shucked. I don't want to work no more.
It is true. You do get to an age where, you know, when I was in college, you know, we didn't have crawfish boils in Houston. It just wasn't a thing. Like you could run across one, but it wasn't a part of the get down.
Yeah.
Then going to college, introduced to the crawfish boiling, again, the communal aspect of it. Everybody's sitting at the table, baby. They dump the big ass pot of crawfish and the corn and the potatoes and his beer, and everybody sits down. And you know, to 18-year-old me, that was the coolest shit ever. Hell yeah. And then, you know, and so you would sit there and you would take the time necessary to get all the meat you could out of tiny crawfish. But as I got older, I was just like, this is great. I'm here for the hang, no doubt. But I can't tell you how many times I ate before I went to a crawfish boil. You know what I mean?
you took the time because you had the time.
I had the time.
And you 18, that's what it's all about.
I had nothing better to do before or after. But, you know, as I got into adulthood, I'm like, I really don't have time to sit here for hours to try and get something that's close to a satisfactory meal.
So, you know what's, you know, obviously the crawfish is a big deal. You know what else is a big deal? LSU, baby.
Go Tigers.
And you know who else is a big deal? Your girl Kim Mulkey.
Now see again. We to longtime listeners of this podcast, you know what I'm about to say. To those who are just joining us that are fairly new to it, Marcus and I never have disagreements. Okay, all right. We might see an opinion differently or have different opinions about things, but we never have disagreements. But for some reason, Marcus likes to say that some of the worst people on the planet are, quote, my guy or my gal. All right, he'll do it for Fatboy 45, he'll do it for Jason Fatlock, he'll do it for Candace Owens, and now he's doing it for LSU women's basketball coach Kim Mulkey. I don't know the lady. I ain't never met the lady. I don't like the lady. So how she get to be my boy?
I have strange feelings about Kim Mulkey. And I'm wondering if you, as an LSU alum, have the same sort of feelings. Like, I like that she wins. Like, I fucking respect the show.
Sure, which is why she's had the career she's had.
Yeah, but god damn, I don't. Oof, it's like Draymond Green. I love the fact that this dude is so good and he's integral to the team winning. But fuck, man, why she gotta be like that?
But you know, that's I might not even be using this right. That's the Sophie's choice that sports fans have had to deal with forever. Mm-hmm. Is that you will have people on your team, and they are awful, reprehensible people, but they're good at their job. They make your team that you love better, and you, even if you don't outwardly root for them, you your tacit approval of them is, in essence, rooting for them. So, you know, this all boils down to, and it's a fairly simple equation. The better you are at your job. And this crosses, you know, from sports as well. But the better you are at your job, the more you win, the more of an asshole you can be. And Kim Mulkey is another example of that, a female example of that, like, you know, some of the other folks you mentioned. Draymond Green comes to mind because as we record this episode of Quality Hang on Thursday afternoon, March 28th, Draymond Green, in less than 5 minutes of basketball last night in Orlando, got his dumbass self thrown out of his fourth basketball to the point where Steph Curry was literally in tears,
shaking his head
his head, basically saying, I can't believe this motherfucker did it again. So that's to get it back to Kim Mulkey. It's she's a very good basketball coach. She's a very good recruiter because, you know, she was a winner and a champion at Baylor. And she was also a terrible human being at Baylor. She's a winner and a champion at Louisiana State. And she's a terrible human being as the head coach of the Louisiana State University women's basketball team.
Yeah, it's interesting because I actually feel like I don't want to make this a racial thing, but I feel some kind of way when it comes to these white coaches, particularly in college sports, who are just the worst fucking people. And all people do is go, yeah, but she's a winner or he's a winner. And I'm like, these black dudes don't get this kind of leeway, man.
Yeah, well, you know, but I think a lot of that has to do with
and I, by the way, I know there aren't a lot of them.
Well, I would, that's exactly what I was about to say.
And I know there aren't a lot of them.
You just don't have enough black coaches in Division I football and in Division I basketball. You just have more in basketball than you do in football. But not nearly enough, and definitely not nearly representative compared to, you know, when you look at how many black people play college football and college basketball.
Yes, sir. I mean, I can, like, I can, my God. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. His name's, he used to coach Temple.
Oh, I know. John Chaney. You didn't even have to say it. It was at his, his face and him about to kill John Calipari in that press conference. That was in my mind's eye. I knew who you were talking about before you started talking about it.
Yeah, it's classic. And funny thing is, I love that dude.
Of course.
I ain't gonna lie. I love that dude.
Of course.
Just because he was going to kill John Calipari.
Listen, and he was he wasn't selling the wolf tickets, dog. John Chaney was going to rip out John Calipari's heart, show it to him, and then throw it against the wall.
And here's the thing, and I want to make sure. I want to deal with Kim Mulkey, because for those who don't know, who've been hiding under a rock, this chick, in the middle of this tournament, decides to make it about her fucking self. Literally calls a press conference just to bitch about an article that the Washington Post is going to be releasing about her. This reporter has been researching this thing and working on it for 2 years, and she got wind of it. She decides to call a press conference, basically saying this person is a jerk, an asshole, and call him everything but a child of God, and decided to go off and had the audacity to talk about, I'm going to sue if this article comes out.
No, you ain't.
You ain't doing nothing. You know why you ain't doing nothing? Because this is the Washington Post. It's not the National Enquirer. Whatever they print, trust me, particularly if this cat's been working on this article for 2 years, journalists know that when you put that kind of time in, you've been, your editor has been there with you every step of the way, actually helping you put this thing together, making sure you get your three sources at least credible, and knocking this thing down. So whatever comes out, I guarantee you, ain't going to be no bullshit.
Nah, she was just doing what has been made popular by Fatboy 45, which is to demonize the media, to talk tough, to talk blustery, and in essence try and get in front of the story instead of just either saying no comment, not talking about it. Or you know, anything of that nature. They can't help themselves. She knows that she's a horrible person that has been able to get away with horrible behavior because she's a winner. And make no mistake about it, she is a winner, right?
Yeah.
Two national championships. She's won a ton of games. I mean, that is the definition of a winner in her chosen field. In life, you know, Kim Mulkey's not a winner because she's a horrible human being. But she's just, you know, she's basically just throwing a smoke bomb out there.
That's what it is.
And trying to, you know, divert from the story. You know, and this was 10 days ago. So everybody is still kind of waiting on pins and needles to see what the Washington Post has to say. I can't wait either. I'd be surprised if it's anything more than she's a terrible person that has said and done some terrible things that don't necessarily equate to, you know, anything fireable or definitely nothing from a law-breaking point of view. I'd be very surprised if it's anything more than her being a tyrant and being verbally and emotionally abusive.
And a bigot. I guarantee you that's coming.
Yeah. 100%. But you know, listen.
I mean, we've known it, but this will confirm it.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
Man, shit. Didn't she go to La Tech? Isn't she from like fucking I think she's from
Yeah, man.
Let me look it up here. But yeah, but and the thing is, as we found out, being a racist, being verbally abusive, being emotionally abusive, coaches don't necessarily get fired for that.
Those
are awful human traits. They're not necessarily fireable offenses.
Rod,
especially
when you're
a winning coach.
What I was gonna say, what's the only thing that can get a coach fired? Losing. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, this actually does track. She went to La Tech. Okay, but she was born in she was born in Santa Ana, California.
She must have moved young.
But here we go. She was one of the first girls to play organized basketball with boys. She's got a long career.
Let me tell you, she
was a hooper.
By the way,
yeah,
I've seen her highlight reel. The chick a ball.
She was a hooper, dog. Hooper. Yeah. And like I said, a winning coach. She was the first to play organized ball with boys, and she played at Nelson Junior High School in Tick Fall, Louisiana.
Oh, shit. Of course.
And led her Hammond High School basketball team. Hammond is, right outside of New Orleans. You know where Hammond is. Led her Hammond High School basketball team to four consecutive state championships. So, it's not an accident that Tim Mulkey possesses some retrograde ideas about people of color and gay people.
Yeah.
Anyway,
absolutely.
I can't
wait till that comes out.
I can't either.
I really thought about this. I'm like, if I am an AD and I'm looking for a coach for my basketball team, and she's available, I am legitimately torn as to whether or not I hire her.
Well, do you want to win or not?
That's the thing, Rod. I want to win. I want to fucking win. But do I want to win at... God, I don't know.
Here's the thing. I don't think she's going to get fired.
No.
Unless she was physically abusive. Okay.
And even then, she might get away with that.
But I think physical abuse thing, you got to start to talk about, okay, we're dealing with somebody here. Because that's the thing that got Bobby Knight in trouble. It was when he put his hands on that one student that had the balls to say to him, what's up, Knight? And then the stories came out about him being physically abusive with players on the Indiana basketball team. That was the beginning of the end for Bobby Knight. So, but not his history of verbal abuse, emotional abuse, and things of that nature. So that's why I don't think that Kim Mulkey, if those are the revelations of the Washington Post article story, that's why I don't think she's going to get fired. Again, unless she put her hands on people. But listen, if she does get fired and there are no allegations of and there's no proof of physical abuse, Kim Mulkey will have a job before the fucking sun goes down. Because athletic directors, their job is tied to their programs winning, okay?
Yep.
Whether you're a football school or a basketball school or a combination of both, the athletic director's job is based on how does the football team perform, how does the basketball team perform. And if you're an athletic director and your job might be shaky and Kim Mulkey is out there, you're trying to get her in the mix so you can keep your fucking job.
And to piggyback that, Rod, with women's basketball being at this point seemingly more popular than men's basketball at this point, and this woman being one of the top star coaches and the superstar coaches, it's going to be even quicker because now people, I hate to say this, but now people give a fuck.
Yep.
Like, money's on the line now. So we're going to get this woman in here, and they know for a fact they're going to win, and they're going to put butts in seats, and they're going to get these fat-ass TV contracts.
Yep.
It's going down.
Yep.
I wonder how I'd feel and I've never been in this position, so I wouldn't know. But if I'm a star athlete, knowing what I know about her at this point, I wonder if I would actually go play for her.
Well, I think you will. If
because think about it, Rod. If you're the star athlete, you got options, and you can get that NIL money if you're real. If you're a legitimate star.
But look at the ladies she's gotten to go to Baton Rouge.
Sure,
Flauge. Yeah. You know, she's from the East Coast. I would presume she had options, but she went where? She went to LSU because Kim Mulkey is a hell of a coach. Angel Reese, LSU, hell of a coach. Haley Van Lith, LSU, hell of a coach. So
she transferred to LSU.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So what's great about what's happening with women's basketball is that it is increasing in popularity, and now these ladies have more options, and these options are good. And that's the most wonderful thing, you know, in terms of what's happening with women's basketball. But I, men's players have been going to play for asshole coaches for years.
That's so
and
true.
Will continue to do so. I don't think the ladies are going to be any different. I think that also with NIL giving them some power, I think that they can go and that coach not necessarily has to walk on eggshells, but that coach knows they could go at any time. You know what I mean? And the player could be like, I'm not really tripping on this broad. You know, I'm caked up. I got options.
I'm on TV.
Yep. So, yeah, the game is the game, but the game is changing.
Yep, that's fact, dude. That's fucking fact. Yeah, I know as an outsider, she has become increasingly more difficult to stomach even hearing her talk about stuff. It's just
she's a reprehensible human being. Like I said, her thoughts, you know, about. I mean, what she did to Brittany Griner, or what she didn't do for Brittany Griner, was that told you everything you needed to know. But she had some dumb shit to say about COVID, and she's a cartoonishly awful person who happens to be very good at her job.
Yeah, but can't knock it. You and I, we said we'd get into this. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson.
I mean,
and yo.
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing. It is what it is. It's an exhibition. Okay. It's not a real fight. Yes,
Mike knock his ass out.
I would be stunned if there's not a clause in the contract that says that if Mike Tyson knocks out Jake Paul, you void the deal or you're going to get less money.
That would be hilarious. And I would call Mike Tyson a complete fool if he took that contract. there was some stuff that was coming out originally that they said were stipulations in the contract. Okay. You know, the shit about he could wear a head guard, his brother could come in, Mike Tyson wasn't allowed to knock him out. Like, I thought there was all that shit, and then they came in and they said, no, all this bullshit. It's going to be no head guards, none of that shit. They got to fight.
Okay, there might be no head guards. I do not believe for a moment that there is not a clause in that contract that somewhere along the lines of, Mike, if you try too hard...
It's verifiable though. Like, you can't get away with it. We will know if that is in there.
But again, this hasn't been sanctioned. It's going to take place in Dallas, so of course it hasn't been sanctioned by Nevada State Athletic Commission. But that's what I'm saying. It's not a real. They can do anything they want to do.
Yeah. It's not a real fight. Like, it doesn't count towards anything. Which I have to say makes me respect this dude even less. Jake Paul, I'm saying, makes me respect him even less. Like, you can't sit and bitch and moan and complain about how you want to be taken seriously as a fighter when you ain't want
to
fight nobody.
He doesn't want to be taken seriously as a fighter, or he wants to be taken seriously as a fighter on his terms, terms that he dictates contractually. He picks fights he can win. All right.
Which, by the way, he
knows how to box. He's cosplaying as a boxer. He could very easily knock both of us out in a span of 3.5 minutes, but he's not a fucking boxer. He knows that. Everybody except the 12 to 17 year old boys that idolize him know that. And that's why no one is really taking this seriously, including Mike Tyson. I'm not mad at Mike Tyson for getting the money. I'm not mad at Mike Tyson for being a part of it. I get it. We would all ask those dumb questions back during Mike Tyson's heyday of, would you get in a ring with Mike Tyson for $1 million? This is just Mike Tyson kind of flipping that on its ear. This is just like, would you get in a ring with Jake Paul and you know, fake the funk for $1 million? And Mike Tyson like, I'll do that. Yeah, why not? Because of course, why the fuck not? Mike Tyson literally has nothing to lose because Jake Paul, in that same contract, is not going to knock Mike Tyson out either, which is a guarantee that Nate Robinson should have got before he was face down ass.
Man, this motherfucker. What are we talking about?
I'm sorry, Nate Robinson.
No, fuck that dude. I'm sorry. You got in that ring. You took that money. You knew what you'd get into. But this is listen. Fighters, everybody who knows the fight game knows that fighters pick and choose. It's not regulated. They pick and choose who they want to fight.
Sure, sure.
They pick and choose who they fight so that they can build up that record so they can get that championship fight.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Padding the record, of course.
This dude will never get that. And quite frankly, I feel some kind of way. Like, on one hand, I respect the hustle, but I can't respect you.
He will never fight anyone who actually has he got in there and fucked around with Floyd Mayweather. That tells you everything you need to know.
Come on,
all
man.
Right, he was in there bullshitting with Floyd Mayweather.
Come on.
I didn't take him seriously to begin with before that. I definitely take him seriously, you know, post that.
Ain't he like 6'4"?
Jake Paul?
Yeah.
I think he's a fairly large sized kid.
Like 6'4". How do you not knock out Floyd Mayweather?
We're talking about easily one of the greatest fighters of all time, without a doubt, the greatest defensive fighter of all time.
Yeah, he
ain't gonna let you knock him out.
But the fact of the matter is, you should have been able to. I'm sorry, you're that big. You should be able to knock this dude out. Like this, the weight disparity is fucking insane. And I don't care how good a defensive fighter you are, when you get into the ring like that and you have that kind of disparity, 20 years younger, I mean, come on, get the fuck out of here.
Like I said, Jake Paul is cosplaying as a boxer. He knows how to fight. He knows how to look the part, but he's not a real boxer. Because if he was, he'd be in there, you know, actually doing the real boxer shit instead of these bullshit exhibitions. And by the way, I'm not one of these high and mighty folks. I'm not going to watch it. Fuck, I'll watch it. It's going to be in the middle of summer on Netflix. Why would I not watch
it? It's free. It's free to me.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, and do I want to be the one of the few people to not be there to witness Jake Paul possibly getting his block knocked off? Nah, I'm going to watch it.
Let's be real.
But I don't have any expectations.
I'm only watching it because Mike Tyson's in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll be 100%.
Completely frank 100%. About that. Like,
100%.
Like, Mike Tyson to this day, if Mike Tyson has a fight, I will watch him fight.
100%.
I will fucking watch him fight anybody.
100%.
As a 17, 16-year-old kid and watching Mike get in there and destroy people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yeah.
Man.
No, I'm right there with you, in complete agreement with you. As I mentioned, we're recording this episode of Quality Hang on March 28th, 2024. And today is Major League Baseball's opening day.
Oh, boy.
The baseball season gets started. The Texas Rangers, boo, are the defending champions of Major League Baseball. And I think this is something, Marcus, we're going to do every year.
Yeah.
And sadly, I think the trend is going to continue as we chart African American
Oh boy.
Participation in Major League Baseball. I remember having this conversation last year on the podcast.
Yeah.
And the numbers were shocking then, Marcus, even more shocking now.
Mm.
When the study to track African American representation and participation in Major League Baseball started, the study started in 1991. 18% of Major League Baseball players were black. Now, the United States population, African Americans make up 13% somewhere in there.
Yep.
So 1991, almost 20% of Major League Baseball players were black. All right. That's not bad. It's not, not bad at all.
Yeah.
Last year, it was down to 7.2%.
Crazy.
7.2%.
Crazy.
This year, it is 6.2%. Marcus.
That's wild.
Marcus.
Wow.
In 1 year. 1 year.
Yeah, man.
Major League Baseball participation by African Americans dropped a full percentage point.
It's fucking crazy.
Some of you are listening right now and going, well, that's just one percentage point. That's not a big deal. That's a massive, massive drop. Half a percentage point would be a massive drop. A tenth of a percentage point would be a drop. A full percentage point in 365 days?
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's seemingly unbelievable. But as someone who has watched baseball his entire life, and I continue to do so, because it is baseball played at its highest level, I laugh because it's not surprising. All of the anecdotal evidence is there. All you need to do is use your eyes.
Well, Ryan, and just think about it. You and I are literally the last of a dying breed. That we are black folks who care and watch baseball.
Who played baseball and still watch baseball,
We are a dying breed. And you think about it. Like, I don't know what can bring it back. I don't know if there is anything that bring it back. But when you think about things like this, and we should have started to really pay attention to things like this, because a long time ago, if the top black athletes had the chance to play baseball or football or basketball, more often than not, they would hit that baseball or at least try to keep playing. But Patrick Mahomes could have played pro ball. He played football. Mm-hmm. It, a lot greater opportunity to get hurt and less money you can make.
Yeah. Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson.
Same thing. Yeah. When you think about these top athletes who are eschewing baseball to go play a sport with a higher mortality rate, so to speak, in terms of a career, and less money, you got to say that means only one thing. The shit ain't cool.
Yeah, the ship be sinking. Cool. And listen, you got white boys making that decision as well. Brock Purdy's father was a former minor league baseball player. Brock Purdy has a basketball background. Brock Purdy way, shape, or form was ever going to play professional baseball.
No. And I'm going to say this, and this might get me in trouble, but I'm going to say this shit. In terms of sports and in pop culture, I'll even push that. If black people don't do it, the shit ain't cool.
Nope.
And I'm just going to be real about it. If black folks don't play baseball, you can best believe the other motherfuckers is not going to be involved because it's not cool.
Nope. Nope.
I mean, the reason that hoops is where it is now in terms of popularity, it's the third biggest sport in the world. Mm-hmm. Sorry, black folks.
Yeah.
Everybody play it. Black folks made it cool.
Yep. Yeah. Well, specifically, one guy made it cool globally, and that's Michael Jordan.
Yes, indeed. Right. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And everybody else is there. But if black folks ain't playing baseball, baseball ain't cool.
And, you know, and the thing is, to go back to something you just said a second ago in terms of stopping the decline of African Americans playing Major League Baseball, man, when the numbers are dropping as quickly as they are, it's a wrap. When you lose a percentage point in a year, you're not stopping that decline because it is already accelerating at a rapid pace. That boulder has picked up an incredible amount of speed down this hill. And I mean, I want the initiatives to continue. I just don't believe that the initiatives are going to be able to reverse this trend that has been trending downward since 1991, and picking up speed. So I think that, you know, less Black people playing Major League Baseball, less Black people interested in baseball, I think that is a function of baseball's bigger issue in terms of its audience being older and whiter and definitely not picking up young people to keep it. You know, baseball's not going anywhere, don't get me wrong, but you still have to have a youthful injection in there to sort of keep it moving with football and baseball. I'm sorry, football and basketball, and now soccer, and this is a bigger sports problem that all of the leagues are afraid of, even the NFL, you have at least one, maybe now two generations of kids who don't fuck with sports, period, at all. All of them, including the NFL. So, you know, you combine all of those factors, it's not looking good for baseball. Again, it's not going to cease to exist anytime soon, but I just think the lack of African-American representation is, you know, not the canary in the coal mine for baseball. It's just a part of baseball's the ill symptoms that baseball has had for a while in terms of it's just not a sport that people geek on. The World Series continues to be every year the lowest rated World Series of all time. That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
Do you remember, Rod, how the world would stop for the World Series? The world stopped. It was the World Series came on, and when that series was over, it was the number one sports story. I'm only saying this a bit facetiously, but I would suspect that if I'm an executive producer at ESPN and, you know, the women's tournament game is on or game 7 of the World Series is on, probably going to get that women's tournament on.
I mean, well, your product is cheaper. You know, the women's tournament game is cheaper than a Major League Baseball playoff game, definitely a World Series game. I saw that ESPN is thinking about getting out of their Major League Baseball contract here before it expires in 2027. Now, this could be ESPN engaging in a bit of saber rattling because they would like to pay less for baseball. Like today's opening day, remember, and it wasn't this long ago. We're not talking about, you know, back when the World Series was relevant 25, 30 years ago. I'm talking about 5 to 10 years ago on opening day, there would be baseball games on ESPN and ESPN2 all day long. Dog.
It was a holiday.
You can't find a baseball game. You cannot find an opening day game on ESPN today on Thursday, March 28th to save your life. They're doing the Rangers and whoever they're playing. Again, the Rangers being the defending World Series champion. They're doing the Rangers and somebody at 4 o'clock Pacific time this afternoon. That's the only baseball game they're showing. Like I said, 5 to 10 years ago, at 10 o'clock Pacific daylight time, there would be a baseball game on. And they would show baseball, on ESPN and ESPN2 all fucking day.
Round the clock coverage on opening
that
day.
That tells you everything you need to know.
Facts, dude. They only have themselves to blame, and I used to think that it was just one issue, but there are so many issues with baseball. I just don't think it is. I know that it will never be as big as it once was, no matter what they do. Now they just gotta fight to stay relevant.
No, they the the horse is out of the barn. Mm-hmm. The generations have passed them by. They're trying, and I'll give them credit. They are finally realizing that television is important, and you have to tailor your sport to television. I think the Picks Clock last year was a resounding success. All of that bitching and moaning about how it was going to ruin baseball or whatever, we got a weekend, and people forgot about the pitch clock. It was an absolute smashing success. I think replay, even though people bitch and moan about it, I think replay has been an absolute smashing success. And the next thing come is going to be the automated strike zone. That's going to be an absolute smashing success. And all of this has made it a better television product. I will sit down now after the pitch clock introduction last year. I will sit down now and watch a baseball game between random teams, because I know I'm not going to see no bullshit. Because I know I'm going to sit down and this game's going to be over within, it's going to take an hour and 58 minutes to, at the most, 2 hours and 30 minutes. That's perfectly fine with me. More than likely, it's going to be around 2 hours. That's great. But this is shit Major League Baseball should have did 30 years ago.
Yeah, man. Too late. What are they going to do about their, biggest star under all this investigation and this basically a dark cloud over Shohei Ohtani? What are we going to do about
it? Hey, this might work in their favor. This might get, because I mean, really, unless he's betting on baseball, to me, it's just not that big of a story. Now, he might be a degenerate gambler. He might be the best friend in the world helping out his homeboy with his gambling debts. Ohtani could be full of bullshit talking about he stole from me or whatever. I don't know.
Yep.
If he didn't bet on baseball, I really kind of don't give a fuck. If you bet on baseball, that's a whole different story. But I think whatever the accusations are or whatever the scuttlebutt is, he's an incredible baseball player that a lot of people, if they don't follow baseball, know about, but they really don't know about. Maybe, just maybe, this is a case where for Ohtani and Major League Baseball, bad publicity turns out to be good publicity, and this could work in Major League Baseball's favor just to get people to pay attention that would normally not pay attention.
Yeah, I feel like this has been, I mean, I hate to say it, I don't really see a there. I feel like this has been really sensationalized.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Everybody's like, well, he's lying about, listen, why is it so, it's not hard to believe to me, and I think I've even brought this up on social media, it's not that hard to believe that this motherfucker's friend did him dirty with his money.
Not hard to believe at all.
This is a story as old as time. A motherfucker gets some paper, and then your so-called best friend, you find out they're stealing from you. How many times have we heard about this happening to people when they get a come up and that best friend steal from
them? It's also, I agree with you, it's also not hard to believe that he's lying his ass off and using his homeboy as cover.
yeah. That's all of that is true. All of that is true. I just feel like the assumption is that he's lying, he's making it up, et cetera. I'm like, I mean, let's have a little bit of grace. Like, this is not.
There's no room for grace and nuance. Fuck that guy. But he's a Dodger. Fuck him.
Spoken like a true Dodger hater.
Hey, if he was an Astro, if he was on my team, I'd be like, y'all really just gonna be like that. What happened to innocent until proven guilty? Even though I know this isn't a court of law, and that doesn't, it's like when everybody was going after the Astros after they cheated, and they cheated. I was like, oh, so y'all just gonna be like that? Like, look at them; they're at the press conference. What do you want them to do? Like, come on, leave my guy Jose, not Jose Abreu, leave my guy Jose Altuve alone. Look at him, man. English is his second language. Be nice to him. If that would have been a Yankee or a Dodger doing that shit, I'd have been like,
you don't even know what you're saying.
Burn the fucking witch at the stake. Kill him. I'm very consistent.
As we all are when we're sports fans.
I'm consistently inconsistent.
It'll really be interesting to see how and if all this stuff affects his performance this year. I mean, he's already going to be almost half a player. So this is going to be really, really interesting.
Hey, let me tell you something, dog. That early season Shohei Ohtani hitting slump is going to hit like crack in the inner city in the 80s. I am all about him. Because listen, Ohtani, again, he's the greatest baseball player of all time. Now, I know we have a very small sample size, and we know who the greats are. All right. This motherfucker is a Hall of Fame pitcher and a Hall of Fame hitter. and he can run like the goddamn wind too. And
dude is
he's
doing
a plus
what
fielder.
Babe Ruth was doing.
Yeah, he's incredible. He's the greatest fucking baseball player of all time. So if he struggles at the plate, you know it's because of his shit, and that would be hilarious.
Ooh, child. Before we get out of here, I got to touch on a couple of things. I have never been the biggest Diddy fan. I'm not going to say that I am reveling in all this Diddy drama, but I ain't feeling bad about it.
Of course not.
I ain't feeling bad. And this dude has been trashed from the jump.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm not alone in this, but when I felt like when Biggie died, this dude was such a piece of shit capitalizing on this dude's death. And listen, I don't say this lightly. I say this because he was legitimately acting like a dude who you look at him and go, nigga, you, I'm about to say it. almost got me. but I was like, yo, this dude, you don't care about this dude.
Yeah.
There was such an insincerity to everything he was saying. Like, you do not care about this dude being dead. You are capitalizing on his death, but you do not care about this dude being dead.
Yeah.
And I always had a bad feeling about him. He came up to the station, I want to say in 2006, and he came up there, and I'm like, ugh. Ugh. Everything about him just gave me bad vibes. Oh, by the way, he went downstairs to the not downstairs. He was next door. At KML, which, by the way, if you're listening outside of San Francisco, that's one of the biggest music stations in San Francisco. He was next door, and he was mad and screaming and throwing a tantrum about something. I'm like, this dude really up here acting like a child? Man, get out of here. I just never had any sort of real life for this cat, man.
You know, my thing is, I've never been a fan of his either. I guess I was more just ambivalent, like, yeah, whatever. He's Puff Daddy. I, you know, sometimes looked at him as a joke, especially when Dave Chappelle turned his satirical gaze toward him and made fun of him with the making a band and all that. My thing with him, because, well, I mean, we're talking 30 years of allegations.
Yeah.
My thing with him is, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Man, come on now.
You know what I'm saying? And
come on.
We've the same thing with Bill Cosby.
Yep.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. We've been
something is up,
man. It's just
like it may not be exactly that, but something is up.
It's too many years of the same story.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Shiesty business practice.
Yep.
Shiesty sexual practices. If you will, it was just always just something, you know, it's just off about the dude. And I'm there with you in terms of how he acted after Big died. It seemed very forced. It seemed very disingenuous.
Yeah. My best friend. Stop lying.
I mean,
dude.
It was just, you know, you go all the way back to him being responsible for a stampede at a party. Like, you know, this is early 90s. He rented out a place for a party, you know, said that there was only going to be them. Picking numbers here. There was only going to be 3,000 people there. He jammed 5,000 people in there. Some shit went down and people died and got trampled and got killed. And, you know, I'll fast forward to where we are right now. It's just too much stuff, man. And I, like many of us, can't verify it. Had no personal connection to him or any of the things that happened, but it was just too much shit that just kept being said to where you just go, I don't know. He just always seemed like a slime ball. But I ran across something on Twitter a few days ago that I did not know about, and this makes sense. Do you know anything about his upbringing? Do you know anything about his father?
No.
I didn't know this either. You know who Frank Lucas is, right?
Of course.
All right, the heroin dealer in Harlem back in the late
American
60s.
American Gangster, baby.
American Gangster. Denzel Washington did the portrayal of him. Frank Lucas, a drug kingpin.
Yeah.
Puff's father, Melvin Earl Combs, was an associate of Frank Lucas.
Huh.
And at age 33, when Puff was 2 years old, his father was shot dead sitting in his car on Central Park West. I had
how's that story not ever been told?
I want to be very careful what I say here.
Yeah.
But if, not that it makes sense, and not that the apple falls far from the tree, but the story had always been told that he was just some scrappy guy that wouldn't take no for an answer, and he showed up at Uptown Records, and forced his way in there through sheer personality and gumption, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And clearly there was that side of him, but also there's a side that has, because even though he was 2 years old, probably has zero recollection or the tiniest recollection of his father.
Sure.
Definitely, as a two-year-old, had no understanding of who his father was associating with and what his father was more than likely doing at the time. That I would think led to his demise via gunshot wound to the head.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me that Sean Combs growing up didn't have some sort of an understanding of the criminal underworld. Is that not that me being judicious and cautious in what I'm saying and trying to be fair to Sean Combs is going to make any difference in the world, because it's not. I try to stay as consistent as I can, when I'm behind a microphone, that I don't want to be reckless in what I'm saying, but I also want to be truthful in what I'm saying. And I'd have a hard time believing that Sean Combs, growing up as a young man, finding out about his father, that he didn't have some understanding of a shadier side of life. Dig what I'm saying?
Dude, of course. Like, of course, dude. I don't think that's reckless at all. I think the recklessness would be if you made some shit up or you just slandered him. But I don't think it's a reckless opinion to say, yeah, he may have known him. I would say, take it a step further, I would say that once he found out that this was his daddy and he had these hookups, probably made him someone who was a little bit more interesting.
That's basically what I'm saying.
A little more pull in the hood, quote unquote. Oh, that's your daddy? That was your daddy. Oh, let me hook you up with this paper. Or, okay, I'll get you in with these people over at this place. Because hip-hop, and people forget this, on most of these hip-hop labels, they got started with a little bit of drug money.
Or a lot of drug money.
That's just being real about it. Most of these independent hip-hop labels, particularly the big ones, they got seeded by a little drug paper.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would not shock me at all if Bad Boy, I'm just saying.
Do you remember the story? And I don't have the specifics, is why I'm one of the reasons I'm asking you, but I think it was over a woman. And Diddy was gonna blow up the car of somebody that was that was messing with a woman he was messing with at the time. I remember hearing about that story and being like, really? Puff Daddy blowing up cars. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, he's stealing from artists. That's a tale as old as time. It's not right. That's a tale as old as time. A producer stealing from artists. I get that he's got shady business practices. I get that he seems to be unethical at his core. But we're talking about blowing up cars. This ain't the mafia. This ain't the movies. I dismissed it because it just seemed too fanciful.
Far-fetched, right?
But now knowing that bit of information about his pops, I'm like,
yes, sir.
Oh,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, remember, he was rumored, and obviously it wasn't him, but he was rumored to have been the person who set Pac up.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a very little talked about thing, but he was also rumored to be involved in the Biggie hit.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but also it's not that far-fetched when you think about how much valuable you are dead than alive.
Yeah.
And I think that rumors were the same thing that was going on with Pac was going on with Big. Both were talking about leaving their label.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what do you do? Make sure they did, so all the money is made, you keep. And wasn't there some fight over Big's masters and shit?
Yeah, yeah. That sounds familiar.
So I'm like, these motherfuckers shady. And it comes back to get you. It will come back to bite you in the ass. We know Easy's story.
Yeah.
Like we know Ghetto Boy's story, like all these cats, man. Jay-Z,
yeah.
Rockefeller, like all these cats started these labels with a little bit of drug money.
No, you're right.
Fucking nuts.
You're right.
To think about.
You're absolutely right. Well, he's Puff is he's fucked. As many people said, the feds don't roll up to both of your motherfucking cribs and then catch you about to get on your private plane with your kids.
Bro.
They don't coordinate a triple. a fucking triple assault, if you will.
Bro,
they don't coordinate that if they don't have some shit on you. So he's fucked. So good riddance to bad rubbish.
Yeah, that is facts. And you had to know the karma would catch up to this kid at some point. By the way, you always know that some shit is weird when literally everybody that you've ever worked with is like, I can't fuck with you. Everybody you work with, I can't fuck.
Yeah, him. Nobody's coming to his defense for sure.
Nobody's coming to his defense, and even historically, Craig Mack said you fucked him. Remember Total? They said they fucked him. Even the fucking people in making the band, everybody's Mace historically said this dude is fucked. Everybody saying you fucked me.
Yeah,
and I just feel like this is your fucking comeuppance, bro. And I'm not mad about it. I think pieces of shit like this need to get that come up.
Well, you know, he's done now because the only people he has that are publicly defending him are those dumb hoteps out there who are like, oh, well, we're going after him. We're going after Puff Daddy for sex trafficking. What about Jeffrey Epstein? What the fuck about Jeffrey Epstein, for God's sakes? Let's stop this whataboutism bullshit, okay?
Yes. By the way, Jeffrey Epstein was thrown in jail.
Yeah.
Are we talking about?
Yeah, like what the fuck are we talking about here? We don't just have to reflexively defend people because they're black. I mean, he's been up to Sean Combs, Puffy, been up to some shady shit for a long time.
Forever. Oh, Rod. I know you got to run, but I would be remiss if I did not bring up Freaknik. I don't know if you had the chance to watch this yet.
I have not seen the Freaknik documentary, but you know, I feel proud in being able to say, you remember that old saying of if you can remember Woodstock, it means you weren't there. I can remember Freaknik because I was there. So this documentary that's out. I never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that a Freaknik documentary would be made. But yes, here we are in 2024.
Insane. It's, oh my God. The weird thing is it makes me feel so good inside. and what's hilarious is seeing like friends of yours talk, oh my God, I'm in this. And you go, dude, that's you. What are you doing? My boy, P. Frank Williams, is actually the producer and director of this show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I like, and I met actually Frank at NABJ about 13, 14 years ago. And so every now and then we get together. He's actually used me in a couple of documentaries. He used me in like a BET thing where we talked about the Black Panthers. So he's a good dude. He used to write for The Source. He's like one of the original writers for The Source. He blew up on that and started doing all these documentaries. So he did all these BET shows, and he was doing the Vibe Awards for a while. Yeah. I was one of the producers of that. And then he started talking about Freaknik a couple of years ago, and I'll be damned if this motherfucker didn't produce this shit. And I'm so juiced. I want everybody to watch the Freaknik documentary on Hulu.
It is definitely on my list of things to check out. The fact that this thing happened organically and it spread word of mouth. This is late 80s, early 90s to mid 90s. I forget exactly when Freaknik ceased to exist. And
no, you're right.
And it did. It needed to die the death that it did, because it was.
Well, you know what it is, Rod. We know how to. We can't have nice things.
Yeah, it was out of control. It was fucking out of control.
Motherfuckers was just wilding out at that point.
It was completely out of control. But remember hearing these rumors about this.
Yeah,
you know, in the late 80s, and again, there's no social media. There was no instant communication like you have right now. Communication was expensive. You want to talk to somebody, you had to call them long distance. The fucking long distance phone calls was expensive. You couldn't text. Yeah. You couldn't email. So you would get this information literally by word of mouth. And being all the way in Houston, you know, it was just basically this rumor of, man, they got some wild shit going down in Atlanta. And what would happen is that you would have folks, black folks, who would have gone to one of the black colleges in Atlanta. And so I love how all of this works out. Yeah. Is that you had you had black people get really into HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities. And it happened for two reasons. Spike Lee's School Days.
Oh, a big one.
And A Different World. So you had black people from all over the country going to HBCUs, and you have a good concentration of HBCUs in Atlanta. Spelman for the ladies, Morehouse for the men.
Clark Atlanta.
Clark Atlanta, thank you very much. Yep. I'm probably missing a couple more. My apologies. A lot of these universities are concentrated in the South, but Atlanta is a mecca for black HBCUs. So you would have people who would either leave their towns, their cities, their states, and go to Atlanta, or they would go to HBCUs in the South, like Grambling, Southern in Louisiana, Alabama A&M, Fisk in Tennessee, all the, you know, Winston-Salem, North Carolina A&T, Bethune-Cookman down in Daytona, down in Florida, Florida A&M. Yep. Shout out to all the HBCUs, Jackson State.
FAMU.
Yeah, all of them, man, because they're so fucking great. But you would have these people go to these, and then they would go to Freaknik. And then they would come back home and tell us, who were either still in high school or we had not gone, like, no, this is a real thing. This is happening. So I say all that to say, I'm a youngster in college, and I hear the boys from Southern talking about Freaknik, and I'm like, well, I got to go see what the fuck this is all about. So we drove from Baton Rouge to Atlanta, and that is not a hop, skip, and a jump. Okay, that is a fucking day-long drive, right?
Yeah.
We piled in the hoopty, and we went to Freaknik, and Lord have mercy. It was just what they said it was.
Couldn't believe it.
It was just like people, but specifically, and listen, I was no babe in the woods. I'd gone to Mardi Gras. You don't get no bigger party in the United States than Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
But there was something about, the thing about Freaknik was, it was young, and it was black. And
it was us.
It was ours. Yeah. And nobody was fucking with you. There was no cop. We was just all out in the streets. And even though it was very sexually charged in nature, it didn't have an air of menace. There was you weren't running around just grabbing girls, whatever. You was looking like a motherfucker. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You was gawking like a motherfucker. But it was understood that was okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I remember it almost with a sense of whimsy and wonder, like, yeah. Wow, this thing that we had heard about so organically, just through word of mouth only.
Yes, sir.
Through word
yes,
of mouth sir. Only. Like, you go and you see that it's true. And it was so yeah. much fun. And, like, even again, it was sexual in nature. There was an innocence to it. And then, as it got more popular,
yeah.
it got more out of control. And it started yeah. not to be as fun. And definitely, yeah. it wasn't whimsical.
So one of the things that was really fascinating about the documentary is watching it. And you watch, like, the cast who started it was from D.C.,
yeah, that tracks. Yeah,
they was going to school in Atlanta.
Yeah, okay.
And most of them was like, "Well, spring break is here. We don't have the money to get home,
and they don't want us down in Daytona.
So why don't we just
do it here? Yeah.
And that's how that shit blew up. And you know who they attribute everything going sideways to?
Who's that?
Luke. They said that. It, before Luke showed up, they said it was fun. They wilded out. They had a good time, but it wasn't what it became. They said once Luke got there and brought his Lukeness to Freaknik, as Luke would put it, well, if it's going to be Freaknik, we're going to have to bring the freak. And so that made it so much more sexually charged than it had ever been. And once Luke got there, it was never the same.
For those who don't know, Uncle Luke, Luther Campbell of the Two Live crew, a First Amendment crusader, and yes, record smut peddler.
I ain't gonna lie. I listen to all.
Of course, get the fuck out of here. I'll still listen to As Nasty As You Want to Be right now and enjoy the fuck out of it. Yo, yeah, no. No, I'm not being a prude here, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh my god!
It doesn't surprise me that yes,
yeah, man.
Luther Campbell would be like, oh, word. Well, yep. this this seems like my kind of party, and then of course he would just go haywire.
Once this motherfucker found out, he brought his shit to it, and they said once he got there, the entire thing changed. It was never the same.
Yeah, that like, sounds about right.
We can't have nice things.
No.
God damn it.
No. I will assume in the documentary they talk about on some level it got to be on, for lack of a better way of putting it, white people's radar, specifically law enforcement. Did they eventually?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Because, you know,
absolutely.
Like, black people can't have nothing
yeah.
without, you know, the law getting involved. So I will yeah, assume that was a part of the documentary.
Mm-hmm, sure was. Yeah. That was a big part of it. They got out there and said, we're not having this here this year.
Yeah.
We're going to bridge this up.
Yeah, yeah. And then, listen, that happened in Virginia Beach. It happened in so many places mm-hmm. where black people who, again, you know, we just weren't necessarily welcome in the normal spring break places. No. You could go, but you didn't feel welcome at Padre Island in Texas or, you know, in Daytona Beach or, you know, definitely Destin, Florida, you know, Redneck Riviera down there in Virginia Beach. Like, so we had to have our own thing. And then we get our own thing. And all of a sudden, you know, after a while, that is taken away from us, you know, by various people for yep. various reasons. So, I just remember the one time I went, there was a freedom there. Mm-hmm. There was a freedom of movement. Yeah. You know, there was a sexual freedom, you know, not yeah. necessarily public sex or anything of that nature, but you know, there was, you know, women were free with their bodies, but more than anything else, we as young black men and women, we were free to assemble. And that's what I remember most about it.
Yeah.
More than the freak part of the Freaknik, I just remember yeah. it was us getting together and doing our own thing, and it was yeah. fun and it was organic, and I remember the hang more than I remember yeah. the shaking butts.
And you know, Jermaine Dupri, who's also in the documentary, he talks about the importance of Freaknik shaping hip-hop because
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Freaknik led to the South having this gigantic voice in hip hop, where now it's the South is kind of the center of hip hop.
Well, Atlanta is 100%.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it is then.
And here's the thing. We didn't know nothing about Atlanta. We from H-Town. No. As far as we're concerned, H-Town is the motherfucking capital of the South. What you talking about? Yeah. You know, New Orleans is the party spot in the South.
Yeah.
Atlanta, I don't know nothing about Atlanta, but motherfucking Hank Aaron. And then you go to Atlanta, and you're like, oh, Atlanta is turned the fuck out. You know what I'm saying?
It's facts. That is facts. This is why I will never not believe it to be true. And that is that Generation X, our generation, will forever be the fucking coolest generation of generations.
Of course. Of course.
I don't care what these kids say. I don't care how old our music is. We started this shit. And if you go to a Gen X party at 79, 80 years old, we're going to be hearing Too Short and Uncle Luke.
Absolutely.
Hips cracking and everything.
Absolutely. It's not going to be no auto-tune.
No,
you
man.
Know what I mean?
There's, man.
I said this on Twitter yesterday. Yesterday was the 30th anniversary of Sex Packets by the Great Digital Underground.
Oh, my God.
How unbelievable was that album and that group and the concept of that group? You'll never have anything like that again, and that was uniquely Generation X.
Yeah, this is hip hop in its golden age, because
of course,
and I tell young people this all the time. Like, I'm not mad at y'all's version of hip hop. Like, it is what it is. All these genres evolve, etc. But the beauty of our generation of hip hop is that it's the most explosively creative part of hip hop.
Yep.
It is literally everybody was doing you didn't want to sound like nobody else.
Yep.
You didn't want to be a biter.
Yep.
Your shit had to be different, or else you wasn't coming out.
You didn't want to be a sucker MC.
No. And now all these dudes sound the same. Like, I don't believe y'all. Y'all don't love this shit. Y'all heard of making your money. I'm not mad at make your money, but where I come from, I can hear Digital Underground and then hear Public Enemy and then hear Run DMC or Too Short or the Ghetto Boys or NWA or Heavy D and the Boys or EPMD or Tribe Called
Black Sheep.
Like, all this different shit.
Das FX.
Das a fucking FX. De La Soul, man. All this shit was so different and unique.
Stetson Sonic.
Oh my God. Stetson Sonic with Daddy on him. Like, you can't even, I mean, there's not even a comparison. Yeah. Y'all, they making the money, but in terms of the creativity and the artistry, you can't fuck
well,
with
it. Here's a dirty little secret. They ain't making no money off of it either. they're fronting.
Not unless they're getting shows.
They fronting, and the shows are garbage. And that's a different story for a different time, because live hip hop is fucking terrible, with the exception of a couple.
Houdini? Come on, man.
It's just unbelievable. Cool J. I mean, we can go on down
cool
the list.
J.
I love the fact that until the
Beastie.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man.
Until the sun burns out, Do What You Like is going to get every party moving.
Yep.
Do What You Like is Humpty Dance is going to get a party moving for fucking ever. And our generation came up with that. It's another edition of your favorite podcast, Quality Hang. That's just the name of it. When we get together, it is indeed that, a Quality Hang. Make sure you follow us all of the socials. My man, have yourself a fantastic week. And let's do this again next week. How about it?
Yes, sir. Let's make it happen, baby.
All right, everybody. Be good at it. We'll see you.